everyone. This is Buzzer Beaters, week number two, actually episode number two. And for those of you who have watched our first episode, you probably recognized that it's been a couple of weeks since we've been on here. And, you know, our intent is to do this every week. But unfortunately, life gets in the way sometimes, right? So, you know, spring break happened for my family last week. We actually had to go to a wedding in Seattle. And the wedding actually was on a Wednesday. The first time I've ever been to a wedding on a Wednesday. And then my daughter, you know, got accepted to Loyola Marymount, and that's probably where she's going to decide to go. And, you know, my retirement plans have definitely changed because of how expensive that freaking school is, right? So, but anyway, you know, happy wife, happy daughter, happy life, right? You know the drill, Twan, because you got two girls and a wife, too, so you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, so, yeah. Hey, how was your week, Twan? How did it go for you?
It was the same thing. Life was in the way. Had to go to L.A. Daughters had a concert down in L.A. Wife was in New York for a little bit for a business trip. So we were down in L.A., drove down there, drove back, just trying to settle in, starting a new job. So there's a lot going on in my life right now. But I'm excited to be on today. Excited to talk hoops, watch the little bit of the championship game last night, you know.
Absolutely.
If we have time, watch a little of that Draymond Green podcast with on there. So I know that's not on the agenda for today, but if we get a minute or two, we can touch on that.
Let's talk about it. Yeah, for sure. Yep. So anyway, for the audience, you know, if this is your first time listening to us, Anthony and I go way back. We're actually high school friends. So that takes us, you know, 34 or 5 years ago. It's been a long time. And, you know, we played basketball together. We went to rival high schools. We are both Latinos, you know, and, we love hoops.
We're both born and raised in San Francisco.
So we're like Golden State Warriors fans through and through. And, you know, we're missing the game right now. Luckily, we have, you know, TiVo to record it, but we're missing the game so that we can bring you this content. So, but for the audience, Buzzer Beaters is a property of grumblingsmedia.com. You can find this podcast on grumblingsmedia.com, Rumble, YouTube, under the profile Grumblings Media, as well as your traditional podcast outlets such as Spotify, Google, and Apple. And also the other podcast that's very popular from grumblingsmedia.com that's also a sports-related has sports related content is Points on the Board. So that was one that I used to do with William. Now he's spun that off and is doing it on his own. And now Anthony and I, or Twan, you heard me call him Twan. That's my nickname for Anthony. We do this every week. Like I said, our intent is to do this every week. And the format of the show is that we're going to go ahead and pick two topics each week. Each of us are going to pick two topics and then we're going to play host for those topics. So what you're going to hear about today is my two topics are, of course, you just brushed upon it, Twan, is that the title game, the NCAA title game happened last night. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, you know, our thoughts and observations of the game, some of the key matchups, you know, some of the NBA potential caliber players that we observed in that game. If we think they're going to be a star, a rotation player, bench warmer, whatever, right? So that's the first topic we're going to talk about. And then the second thing is, you know, Nick, this is the last week of the NBA regular season. So we now know that the playoffs and the play-ins are pretty much set. But we don't know is where they're going to be seated. So that's the next thing that we're going to talk about. And then, Twan, yeah, maybe you can talk about what you want to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I teased it a little bit on our last podcast. One of the ones is an article from a site called Fade Away Worlds. They basically created a pyramid, and we'll go over it a little bit. And they made their they evaluated who they thought were the most skilled players on the pyramid. There's a total of about, I want to say 25, 30 players on there. I don't know if we're going to touch on all of them, but we'll kind of go through them because it's an interesting topic. It's something Eddie and I, and for those of you that don't know, you know, Eddie and I are friends, like you mentioned, we go to lunch, we sync up. So every time we're together, we're always talking hoops. If the Niners are on fire, like they have been the last couple of years, we'll talk a little bit of football as well, but it's primarily around hoops. And so that topic, we're going to get into that because I've always had a strong position on size is not a skill. Right. You know, skill is a skill. but we'll get on that a little bit. And then the other one was I wanted to talk about the triple-double a little bit. You know, Jokic is currently the triple-double machine. Kind of looked up some stats on, you know, who leads that. And, you know, what is the impact of the triple-double today? What does it mean in terms of greatness for the players? You know, Russell Westbrook is the leader, and I'm kind of, you know, leading the witness here a little bit. But, you know, Russell Westbrook is the leader on triple-doubles. What does that mean towards his career? Does it matter? Is there an impact? Those type of things. So looking forward to having those conversations.
All right, great. And just to set the stage, our intent is to bring a maximum of 15 minutes for each of these four topics. So about an hour's worth of content is what we're planning to do. Sometimes we might go a little bit over. Sometimes we might go a little under. But we definitely like to invite you, for those of you listening, to give us feedback. Tell us some of the topics that you thought were good, some of the things that you probably can do without. What are some of the things you'd like for us to talk about in a future session? So for those of you who have the ability to put a comment through your platform, please do so. We invite that. So let's go ahead and get started here. So Twan, you saw the game last night, right?
It was
essentially the Zach Edey show for Purdue. And then, you know, UConn, you know, they just had a game plan to just have Zach Edey beat them as much as they can, because they know he can't score 75 points on his own, which is what, you know, UConn did to win the game. They scored 75 points. Yeah. And then, you know, of course, Purdue scored 60 points. But, you know, Zach Edey is definitely a very dominant college player. We saw that. But, you know, it looked like a heavyweight fight in the very beginning. They definitely were feeling each other out. I thought both teams were playing pretty damn well in the very beginning. But, you know, what I saw is that UConn, they play like a pro game, man. I mean, a lot of movement. It reminds me of the Warriors, the way that they were moving the ball, and a lot of cutting and slashing. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, the commentators are talking about, like, you know, how difficult it would have been to really pick an MVP for that, because everybody did their job and did it well. There's nobody who really, really stood out on the UConn side. Whereas you can see, if Purdue won, Zach Edey was going to be the MVP. It was pretty evident that it was their game plan to have him, you know, dominate as much as he can and kick the ball out. So that's what I observed. What about you, Twan? What did you see?
Yeah, well, what I saw was, you know, Edey. It was the Edey show. But UConn had something that a lot of other teams don't have. That's that Klingon guy. He's a pretty big fella. So he can hold his own, which allowed what I think is what basically UConn decided to do is, hey, you know, Edey, have a game. We're going to not double you for the most part while Klingon's in there. And we're going to see if the other guys can beat us. And clearly the other guys couldn't. I agree with you. They had a solid game plan. You know, they got a Hurley there as a coach, you know, Bobby Hurley, which we grew up watching, you know, his dad, senior, you know, I'm familiar with him as well. So, you know, they did have a game plan. I enjoyed it. Actually, the guy Newton stuck out to me. I thought he had a better game than most. I believe Castle's a freshman. He was a little more timid. You could tell he got skills. But the one thing that stood out to me, and I, you know, one thing that, you know, I think we're going to talk about is I, like, at least Edey, you know, Klingon, I don't even know if he's going to, you know, he's probably projected in the first round. I don't know, but they're so slow. They are so slow for the NBA game. I can't see them being starters in the NBA game. They're just, and, you know, and especially, you know, Edey or Edey's going to face big bodies, you know, the Jokic's, the guys like that.
Embiid.
You know, you name them. I mean, some of the older
Rudy
guys.
Gobert.
Yeah. So and he was getting frustrated. You know, you could tell he was getting frustrated. I actually thought a couple times in the low post, he got away with tossing some elbows. You know, he was kind of trying to clear people out. You can tell he was getting a little frustrated, but the Newton was the guy that stood out to me. He kind of had an all around game. He could pass it underneath. He kept throwing lobs to, I believe his name was Johnson, the tall guy who was fouled out. So those are kind of some of my early thoughts on that.
Well, you know, the players that you mentioned, so you asked about, or you brought up about, you don't know where they're projected to be drafted. I mean, I looked around various websites, and the highest projected draft guy in that game last night was Donovan Klingon, the center for UConn. 7 foot 2, he's got good size, he's pretty athletic. You know, he can shoot the three, but it's not really a skill set of his right now. But, you know, he's a really good defender. That's one thing that stuck out about him, is that he can play some good D Is he athletic enough for the NBA? I mean, he can. I mean, you got guys like Jakob Poeltl who plays, you know, for the Toronto Raptors. He doesn't really, you know, he's not very athletic, you know, but he actually does the job. He's a big guy and he does the right. He can board, he can D. Yeah. So I kind of see him being in that mold, but he's projected to be a lottery pick, Donovan Quinley. He's probably like a top 10 pick. I've seen him as high as 6 and as low as 10. Wow. On various draft boards. And then the next guy that appears on there on the draft high is Stephon Castle. Because, you know, he's a 6'6" guy. You can see that he's a really good defender. I mean, you can see that. He's a very, very good defender. You know, he kind of reminds me, you know, of a younger, you know, Andrew Wiggins, who's defensive-minded, right? Because he's very, you know, sleek. You know, he's very, you know, strong. He's a bigger kid. So I can see why he's being projected because, you know, you look at the NBA recently in the last maybe 10 to 15 years, there's been a big emphasis on drafting defensive-minded guys, defensive-minded guys that can evolve to be, you know, offensive players and become a two-way player, right? You know, I would say back in, you know, the 80s and 90s when we were watching the game, you know, I wouldn't say defense really stood out as much. It was really definitely a big offensive game, you know, but then the big guys are the ones who asserted themselves. I mean, we saw a flashback last night of, you know, the big guys kind of dominating the game, right? Which, you know, it's kind of becoming the trend a little bit again in the NBA, you know, as the Warriors have kind of started to get slower and older, right? They brought this brand of basketball that you see today in the NBA, you know, where the outside shooting and a lot of cutting and just a lot of spacing. But we saw a throwback right here, right? So I can see why Stephon Castle is, you know, looked at very favorably by NBA scouts because of his size and just his sheer determination of being, you know, a good defensive player. And you can see that he was doing that very well last night. Can't shoot very well.
He can guard the point guard who's listed at 6 foot, but that kid ain't 6 foot. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, you're talking about the Purdue point guard. You're talking about Braden Smith. Braden Smith.
Yes, so, yeah. That kid was not 6 foot, and, you know, they had him on. You know, no, and you bring up a good point. I mean, you know, I think of guys like Kawhi Leonard, who was drafted for his defense, right? He was offense second. Latrell Sprewell was drafted for his defense.
Back,
you know,
in the day.
He became an offensive player. I agree. If you're a shutdown defender, it's a lot easier to teach offense than the other way around. It seems like offensive guys.
Absolutely.
I can't think of many offensive guys who've picked up their defense. You know, later on.
Jimmy Butler is another one. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is another one.
Yes.
You know, he's a defensive-minded guy. He came out of Kentucky. And, you know, he's now evolved his offensive game. He wasn't like that when he first came into the league. He's been in the league for 6 years, but a lot of people didn't know about him because he just really, you know, in the small market, right? But, the NBA scouts are looking for big guys, you know, that are versatile, that can create a positionless style of basketball where you have all these guys that can guard every position, and guys that are athletic and long and play defense are who these NBA scouts are definitely salivating. So that I can see why Stephon Castle is up there. The next guy that I saw that's on the draft boards after that is the guy you already brought up, Tristan Newton. You know, he's kind of a combo guard. I wouldn't say he's a point guard. He's a kind of a combo guard, which isn't a bad thing in today's NBA. It used to be a bad thing back in the day. Like, we don't know where to put this guy, right? It's a tweener. And that used to be a bad, you know, bad thing for players, right? They wanted people who were just either a point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center, and that's it, you know? But now there's value in having guys who can do both. So Tristan Newton, I think, is a guy that is attractive because of his size. He's a 6'5" guy. He can play point guard. He can play shooting guard. You know, he can be kind of like another Anthony Edwards-like kind of player, right? You know, kind of the same build. You know, he's a big, muscular kid, and he's pretty athletic. So, you know, that's the next guy. And then the very last guy is Zach Edey. And I think the reason why, you know, they haven't projected in the late first round, you know, probably like around the 28th through 30th pick. And, you know, I've seen it sometimes being a little higher, but I think, you know, the eye test shows that this guy, you know, he's a good college basketball player because he's so freaking big, right? He's 7'4", 300 pounds. You know, you get him the ball. There's not many people in the college that are like that. So he's going to stand out, right? But he reminds me of Yao Ming kind of. Yao Ming, but with not as skilled as Yao Ming. That's what he reminds me of.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say Klingon is projected to be higher. That's got to be purely for his shooting. I mean, because down in the blocks, Edie's much better in the blocks, but that doesn't
for sure.
That seems for to sure. count less nowadays.
I think it's more because he's a defensive minded big guy. I mean, he was playing Edie pretty damn well, man. Honestly, I was impressed in how well he was making Edie work. And you know, you could see some of the counter moves that Edie started doing because of how, you know, Klingon was defending him. You could see that, you know, Edie is definitely skilled with the offensive side. I mean, he did some turnaround hook shots. I was like, whoa, this guy's, you know, he has some pretty good skills there, right? The only thing that concerns me about him in the NBA is that there's going to be very athletic guys, and he's going to, you know, he's going to be forced to have to be able to guard guys in the outside. And that's a liability, you know, for a guy that's not able to move like him, right? I mean, Jokic, as good as he is, he's a liability on the defensive end because he can't move as well, right? He's not as athletic, you know? Correct. Whereas Gobert can move. He can go anywhere. He can guard anywhere in any position. He's a seven-foot guy, but he's very athletic, and he's very long, right? So, you know, that's what the NBA guys, if Klingon could be like a Rudy Gobert, he's a value. And that's probably why they think he could become like him because, you know, that he already has the defensive instincts. He's not really offensive minded. Neither is Rudy Gobert. He's not an offensive minded guy. He gets his points and gets, you know, by putbacks and, you know, and lobs and stuff, but he's not like trying to create his own shot. And that's kind of what the mold of Klingon. I think Klingon would be perfect for the Warriors. Honestly, Klingon would be a good fit for the Warriors because he does a lot of the things that they need. You know, he's a bigger version of Trayce Jackson-Davis.
So. Yeah, I'm a little concerned about his footwork because Gobert has better footwork than Klingon does. Klingon's still a little slow, but I agree. I mean, especially down in the low blocks where Edie was like right underneath the hoop and Klingon managed to like block a couple, defend a couple, have a miss from really close range. So curious about the Warriors. Do you see him, what, is coming off the bench guy? Do you see him as – what do you see him on the Warriors squad?
I would say that, you know, for next year, I think Trayce Jackson-Davis, because of his versatility, I think he's going to be the starting big next year. If they were to draft Klingon, which they wouldn't be able to do it unless they make a trade, right? Because Klingon's going to be drafted, you know, in the 10th. But let's just say fantasy land here that they do get him, right?
Yep.
He would definitely be coming off the bench, but they would have two guys that are very similar in skill set. So with Trayce Jackson-Davis, for instance, sits, Klingon can come in and fit right in, right? He does a lot of the same things that Trayce Jackson-Davis can do. And he's probably a little bit more defensive-minded, at least one-on-one defensively, than Trayce Jackson-Davis. Trayce Jackson-Davis, I think, is being tutored by Draymond to be a very good help defender, and I think that's what he is right now. He's a very good help defender. But I think Klingon, right now, from what I've seen, he's a better, you know, post defender, kind of, you know, one-on-one defender. I'm sure he's good, you know, a help defender, but that's what I see. I think he'd be a great fit for what the Warriors.
I agree with the post. I'm still dubious on kind of players outside, guarding players outside, guarding smaller players, guarding things of that nature. I'm still a little dubious because the one thing that did stand out to me, and it's hard to calculate, but when I was watching the game, everyone on both teams seemed to move so much slower than an NBA game. Like everyone was just so much slower paced, which then causes me concern for anybody that's playing defense, right? Their lateral defense doesn't have to be as quick. They don't need to move as fast. So I'm curious where Klingon goes because if you were to ask me, just kind of looking at him, I'm thinking he's between 15 and 20 in the first round.
Yeah. I mean,
outside of the lottery.
That's what you think. That's what you think. Yeah, that's what you observe and based on what you know about basketball. But I can see why he's, you know, it's not a very deep draft for the other thing, right? I mean, you know, remember Mike Dunleavy, right? He was drafted number three, and he's probably not a number three talent, right? He probably was a later, but the draft, he can't help it where he's been drafted. It's just because relatively he was better than most in that draft. Same thing here. It's not a very deep draft, and I think that's part of the reason why you see Klingon kind of being up there. You know, if you kind of see like, you know, the draft picks that are going, a lot of them are coming from the European League. A lot of them are coming from the G League Ignite, you know, the G League in general, right? So that the first five or 10 picks, that's, you know, where this guy, you know, that's where, you know, those guys are falling, you know. Yeah. That's why you get like, you know, I think the first guy that I see that's coming off the board that's in college is this guy from Kentucky, Rob Dillingham. He's Kentucky. Hey, Rob Dillingham is the guy who's a point guard, and he's got like this explosiveness to him that, you know, he comes off the bench, but they think that he has a lot of NBA kind of Kyrie-like skills, right? You know, in which, you know, we're kind of doing a little foreshadowing of what your topic is going to come about, the skill level, right? But anyway, so I think we pretty much beat this one to the end. You know, it was a good game for about the first 10 minutes. And then after that, you know, it just, you could see what was happening. And UConn just did their game plan, and they won 75-60 over Purdue. So,
a comment. Did you see when Hurley pushed his player and he got a
turnover
on that? I thought that was funny. That's a little bit of a little Bobby Knight going on right there.
I like that guy, man. I like his fire. Yeah. I just like the way he is. He's cool. I can see why the players like him. You know, he's a fiery guy. He's just kind of like one of them. He's not trying to be bigger than them, and he's just one of them, right? I just like the guy, man. And a lot of people comment on just kind of like how, you know, kind of a spicy personality is, but I think that's his appeal.
I like it too, because it seems to come from a good place, right? It doesn't seem to come from a place of anger or bitterness or, you know, coming down. Right. But, you know, people like that tend to be polarizing. Either you like them or you don't. But I like to see his energy and, you know, him wanting to win that bad. Because I thought it was pretty cool. Just wanted to comment on that. Exactly.
I'll tell you what. As a coach, I'd be the same exact way, man. I mean, you and I used to coach the teams together, man.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
We both are fiery Latino guys, man.
Yes, I've gone after the refs, right?
So, you know, Anthony and I used to coach back in the day. When we were in high school, we coached, you know, grade school. We didn't get to high school. We just did grade school. I think 4th through 8th is what we did. Yep. So we had a good time doing that. So we know our hoops.
My daughter's basketball a couple years as well. But
there you go, man. There you go. All right, man. So let's go to the next topic. So the next topic I wanted to talk about is, you know, the NBA regular season is coming to an end this week.
Yes, it is.
You know, the East. You know, the East, it's not as competitive, in my opinion, as the West. And it's pretty evident, you know, because if you look at the East standings, you know, the number 2 through number 6, they're only separated by 2.5 games. You know, if you look at the 2 seed, because Boston is so dominant. I mean, they were just putting, I was watching the Boston game tonight, by the way, they were playing Milwaukee. And by the way, you know, just a quick little aside. You know, I don't know if you've seen lately, but the refs seem to be kind of like swallowing the whistles lately. They don't really call a lot of things. And I don't know what happened and how that happened, because it was kind of getting annoying when they were making all these calls. But we saw tonight, in tonight's game, I don't know if you watched it, but there was only 2 free throw attempts by both teams combined tonight's game.
It ended
30 minutes earlier than it was supposed to, right? So because you don't see, and the commentators are making that comment, it's like, man, we've never seen this, you know, right? I think it's only happened like one at a time, and I don't know how long, but anyway. But Boston has been very dominant. You know, they're a dominant team. They get bored, I think, sometimes, is why they lost by, you know, when they were up by 30 points to Atlanta. That, you know, it's human nature. Once you're ahead, you kind of just like, we got these guys, right? And then you kind of let your guard down, and then, you know, crap happens, right? And that's why I think coaches tend to keep their players in, even with 2 minutes left, if they're up by like 15 or 20, right? Because they know what can happen. It can happen quickly. So, but if you look at the East, 2 through 6 is only separated by 2.5 games.
Yep.
Then you look at the West. The West, you go from 6 through 10, and they're only separated by 3 games. So it's it's going to be very interesting what happens here in the final week. I mean, right now, all the teams have been, you know, decided. You know, we know that, you know, 1 through 10 in each conference, they've already clinched. But what we don't know is essentially where they're all going to fall, except for Boston. Boston is the only one that we know that they're the number one seed in the East.
Correct.
But in the West, we don't know. Well, so
Boston's the number one seed till they win the championship, if that's what they're going to do, because they'll win it in the they'll be the number one seed in the finals too.
Right. Exactly. But you know, it just shows like how competitive this league is right now. So what I wanted to ask you, Tuan, is looking at, let's focus on the East first, right?
Okay.
What matchups do you see that intrigue you? It could be play-in. And by the way, you know, just to revisit the play-in, yep. I think last week when we were talking about it, I think we were under the assumption it was a different format. And we just kind of were trying to remember, and we didn't remember it. But I researched it, and it's actually, you know, the 7 and 8 teams, whoever wins, they move on automatically. You win, and that's it. The loser of that 7 and 8 plays the winner of the 9-10, and then the whoever wins that game has to go ahead and they get the 8th seed, right? So, the Warriors being in the 10th position, they're going to have to win 2 road games essentially right now, unless crap happens in the next 4 games where they move up, right? But anyway, so what do you see as far as, intriguing games in the East, whether it be play-in or first round? And is there anybody that you see that can unseat Boston?
Well, I said it last week. I think the Pacers are a team to be on the lookout for. I think they're a well-balanced team. I like the way they play. I like their approach. I think that they have the possibility of upsetting Boston. So if I were to look at that, I don't know how it's all going to fall out. Obviously, presuming, like, kind of touching back on last week a little bit, like, Philly plays Miami. Now that Embiid is back, even though I bet against Miami every year and Miami seems to pull it off, I'm going to say Philly beats Miami. Then Miami beats either 9 or 10. Right. So basically 1 through 8 is going to stay at 1 through 8. I can't see Miami beating Boston, but Miami's got a lot of experience, but I don't see it happening. From there, you know, we're looking at Philly, Milwaukee, Indiana, Orlando, right? That would be what it is today. Like you said, there's like a couple of games separating all of this. So this is subject to change, but I can see the Pacers beating the Magic easily. So I can see that happening easily. New York, Cleveland. Again, I think that's one of the guys that you mentioned, one of the teams you mentioned last week as a team that you think is a little bit of a powerhouse. I still would take Cleveland in that pickup. But I think, to me, if you're asking me to pick, I would say Indiana has the best possibility of beating Cleveland. I mean, of beating Boston.
You know, with respect to the Knicks and Cavaliers, so when I brought this up last time, I still think they're a dangerous team. But when I was making that comment, I was thinking Julius Randle was going to come back, and he's not. He's out. He's not coming back. Yeah. So, you know, they got back Mitchell Robinson. They also got back OG Anunoby. So they the only guy they're missing is Julius Randle. But I think that they have been able to, you know, adjust without, you know, Julius Randle, because it's been so long since he's played. So they figured out how to work without him, and they still continue winning. So I still think they're a dark horse. You're saying Cleveland?
I think New York. Well, between those two, I think Cleveland would beat New York. But to me, my dark horse, I'm going to stick with the Pacers. I think the Pacers are going to make some noise in the postseason.
Okay. And what about the Bucks? What do you think of the Bucks? Oh, by the way, before I even get there, Bucks. Did you know Giannis sustained a calf injury, which they fear could be more than that? He's going to have an MRI tomorrow because he had a non-contact injury happen. Yeah. He started kind of jogging up the court and kind of fell to the ground. So, and he was kind of, you know, doing the same thing that Kevin Durant was doing when that happened to him with his Achilles.
Yeah.
And he wasn't walking very well after. So anyway, but what do you think about Milwaukee now that you know that information?
No, I mean, whether that information or not, I mean, obviously this information makes it worse for Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee's just falling apart. I just think that they're at risk of losing in the very first round. I just think that they're, When they traded away Drew Holiday, I think that was a mistake. I think they should have never done it.
I agree.
You know, I know they picked up Dame Lillard, but that wasn't a good trade off for them. They needed Drew Holiday was their leader, kind of was the heart of that team, and I just think that they're not going to do well. Milwaukee's kind of rough for me because I don't know what they're going to do from here going forward. But my prediction is Milwaukee loses in the second round at the latest. They'll lose maybe in the first.
Without Giannis, they're a different team, man. Yeah, exactly. I hope he doesn't get injured.
Yeah, and the whole Doc Rivers thing, you know, Doc has a reputation of teams kind of falling apart under his realm, especially teams that are favorites, you know, as he's had with many of the Boston teams and things of that nature. So to me, I don't think that was necessarily a smart move picking up Doc Rivers, but – They need something.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
They don't have it on the team right now.
That pretty much seals their fate if Giannis can't play, man.
Oh, absolutely. If Giannis can't play, it's for sure. They're dropping to like, you know, a 6-8 seed at that point. But I'm saying even with Giannis, you know, I can see them not going much further than the second round.
So you essentially called that, you know, the Miami Heat and the Sixers are going to be the representatives from the play-in to be the 7 and 8 seeds. And then you also have Indiana being the potential dark horse to upset Boston if they get to that point, right?
Yep. All right. How about you?
I'll give you my take real quick.
Yeah.
I agree with you that I think Sixers and Heat advance. To me, I think the dark horse is Miami Heat, man. Miami Heat and the New York Knicks are the two dark horses in the East that I think could give the Celtics some trouble. We already saw that Miami beat the Celtics last year, right?
Yep.
The Celtics are going to be more motivated to do it this year because they got embarrassed, right? They thought, oh, what the hell? We got a play-in team coming here trying to beat us? Yeah, right. And look what happened. A play-in team beat them. And that's part of the reason why you see, you know, a lot of these guys in the 9-10 position on both sides having some hope, because last year you had two playing guys go at least to the conference finals, and one of them got to the finals, right?
Yep.
So that's a good example for, you know, for coaches to lean on and say, hey, look, you can do it. So don't give up, right? So play hard, right? So I say Miami or Knicks can create enough problems that they could potentially upset Celtics. But the Celtics, I think, are just different this year, man. I think they're going to be tough to beat.
Just that you touched upon earlier was that 30-point lead that they lost. You know, I'm concerned about that. And the reason I'm concerned about that type of attitude, if they lost interest, is if you're a championship team and you've won championships, you know what it takes, and you can flip it on. I mean, we can argue whether you should be doing that or not, but for the sake of argument, they can't do that not having won a championship with this current regime. I don't think that they can afford to kind of just lay off the gas. I think that they should be hungry, especially the way that they've gone out of the playoffs the last two or three seasons. I think that they should be pushing it to the max every bit of the game. Once they win a championship or two and they know what it takes, then maybe we can have a little bit of a different conversation. So that attitude concerns me going into the playoffs, because teams like Miami, they don't lay off, right? They'll put their foot to your throat, and they'll choke you out, you know, as quickly as they can. And if Boston thinks they're good enough because their record or because, you know, the competition or whatever, I'd be a little weary of that. And I think that there is a strong possibility that some team will knock them out here and then not make it to the finals.
Okay, so you're saying the probability is higher than everybody thinks.
Well, I just think that if they blew a 30-point lead because they lost interest, I think that's a bad sign. You know, if it's just one of those nights where, hey, things just turned on you, you know, things like that. But
it happens, though. It happens to every team.
No, especially now. I mean, 20-point lead's not what they used to be, right? If somebody goes on a run with 3-point barrage, then you're back in the game. But I'm just saying if they lost interest, you mentioned that, you know, earlier, that they maybe lost interest or, you know,
it's human nature. Once you're up by a lot, man, you kind of relax. Yeah. You know, it happens to everybody, right?
No, it does. But you know, you're hoping that happens to someone who's already won championships and they know what it takes. These guys haven't gotten to that plateau yet.
So yeah, here, because you're referring to the Warriors there. You're referring to the Warriors because the Warriors were notorious for doing that, turning it off and on. Right.
Correct.
And
the Bulls used to do it. The Lakers used to do it. You know, the Pistons used to do it. They all. Because they knew what it took. They knew when to turn it on. And Boston doesn't know that yet because they haven't
won. That's fair. It's a fair argument. It's a fair point. So, all right. So let's move on to the West. So we can go ahead and try and finish this within an hour. So, all right. So what about in the West? What are the intriguing matchups that you see both playing in the playoffs?
Well, last week when we spoke, I mentioned, you know, the Timberwolves. I thought that they were – so interestingly enough, they're tied for first place with Denver. I, you know, obviously it's hard for me to say I consider the number one seed a dark horse. But Minnesota hasn't done much. You know, Denver's the champion, so that's someone they got to get past. So to me, that 1-2 matchup, that Denver-Minnesota matchup, is intriguing to me. Like I think that no matter how the seeds end, if those two play for the – Western Conference Finals, Minnesota's going to be the underdog, right? They just will. But I think that they have the potential to go all the way. I think that they're a solid squad. I think they're, like I mentioned last week, they're built on defense. I think that that's important. I think that they're very exciting. And as I mentioned last week, the Thunder's still really young. You know, I just think that, you know, they may shock a person here or not. And then, of course, the ever-present Clippers. The Clippers got a lot. They got Harden. They got Paul George. They got Kawhi. They got a lot of older heads, as we would say back in the day. They got a lot of older heads that, you know, if they turn it on, if they stay healthy. But my question with Kawhi is always his desire, right? You know, he gets hurt quite a lot. I don't want to question, you know, his injuries or what pain he's going through. But, you know, if he can stay healthy throughout the playoffs, he's a difference maker. He can win. He's proven it. He can win a series by himself. So the Clippers are obviously someone there. And then the Mavericks at this point, I'm going to say no. Like the Mavericks, I don't. Oh. Yeah. I'm going. What is the show me state? Is it Missouri? I'm going to go the show me state, right? So I got a show me state for the West, which is the Dallas Mavericks. And I got a show me state in the East, which is the New York Knicks, right? So to me, those are two teams. Like, you better show me something before I start believing in you.
So to me, the Mavericks, I think, are the darkest horse in the West to me. Now, you know, with those two moves that they made where they brought in PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, man, now they have athleticism at the big level, right? And these guys, you know, especially PJ Washington, he can shoot, you know, so he's one of these stretch fives, stretch four or five kind of guys, and he plays good D. I think that move was genius, honestly. You know, then they have these other guys that can shoot from the outside, you know, a Tim Hardaway, you know, who can shoot, you know, and of course, Kyrie Irving can break every defense down, as well as Luka Doncic doing the same thing. They have two guys there that just break defenses down and just pass to the open guy whenever they want. So to me, they're going to be an issue. The only thing that I would say against them is both those guys are not very good defenders. Yes. Kyrie and Luka are not good defenders, and they can be had. But
they're not willing defenders, which is a difference.
Right. They're not exactly. But they have other guys on that team that can kind of, you know, fill in the void for you, or kind of, you know, like a Draymond Green, a great help defenders. Right. They have guys on that team that could essentially, you know, make up for any mistakes, not all mistakes, but some mistakes. If they do it too much on the defensive end, then, yeah, they're going to be a liability. But they're already a liability as it is. If you look at comparatively against other teams that have good wings and good guards that are both offensive, defensive minded, these guys are the cream of the crop on the offensive side. There's no disputing that on the guard side. They are the cream of the crop. There is no way that nobody can stop both of these guys at once. There's no team who can do it. Even as versatile as the Boston Celtics are, I don't think they can do it. So, to me, the Mavericks are the dark horse. All right, so keep going. You're talking about
Thing about the offensive side of the Dallas skill set. I'll be curious to see how they respond when the refs are swallowing their whistles, you know, and they're having a rough time getting to the
hole. Yeah, we know about Luka. He just cries and whines all the time.
Correct.
Yeah, you're right.
Correct. But it's not only that. It impacts the strength of their game, right? So now what are they when you take away the strength? Because they're going to get bodied. They're going to get pushed around. You know, the whistles are not going to blow as frequently. So, all right. So going down the line here, Phoenix, man, I don't know what to think about Phoenix, right? At times I look at Durant and I'm like, he's done, right? Like, he's getting older. It's not. And then I look at Durant and he looks strong. You know, Booker hasn't won anything of significance without, you know, somebody by his side. Beal is, you know, he's in and out of the lineup. I mean, I think they're Yeah, correct. And so, I mean, you know, so has Durant been the last couple of years. He's been injury prone. I think if they can stay healthy, maybe they win a first round. Maybe they upset, you know, someone in the higher bracket who they'd be facing, what, the Thunder right now? I could see them beating the Thunder. I can see that happening. But I think after that, I think that, no, I think they're going to be done. And then the Pelicans. Okay. The Pelicans have the potential to be, like, if we're going to go true dark horse, I can see the Pelicans being somewhat of a dark horse. They've got a pretty solid squad. They're pretty evenly balanced. You know, Zion seems to be waking up and playing a little bit better as of late. So that's a pretty good function there. Sacramento's dying. I mean, they're fading. They're fading fast. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting here going, hey, I hope Sacramento I hope the Lakers get above Sacramento, because I think if the Warriors play Sacramento, I think they're going to beat them, right? I think
I agree.
And I have a lot of questions around the Lakers, right? So we'll see. But outside of that, I don't think the Lakers or the Warriors are going to make much noise in this playoff. So in terms of kind of reassessing from last week, in the Pelicans-Kings, I think the Pelicans beat the Kings. And I think whoever wins from the Lakers and the Warriors, which right now I'm probably going to – I hate that I'm saying this, but I'm probably going to say the Lakers beat the Warriors and then the Lakers beat the Kings. And it'll be – the Lakers will be the 8th seed and the Pelicans will be the 7th seed. That's kind of the way I'm looking
at it. But you know what, though? Check this out, though. Check this out, though, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Sacramento Kings lost tonight, right?
Yep.
So they're now the numbers 9th seed right now.
Okay. So it just flopped.
It just flopped. I mean, they're tied right now for the 9th seed. And, you know, we'll see what's going to happen tonight. But we know that Anthony Davis isn't playing tonight, against the Warriors. And Anthony Davis is a matchup problem for the Warriors, no matter how you look at it. So the Warriors, I think they're going to have their game faces on. They're going to want to win this game because they're going to want to climb the ladder themselves, right? But right now, the Kings and Lakers are tied. So if the Lakers lose, then, you know, they stay where they're at, right, as far as the Lakers do. But if the Warriors win – you know, there we go. Then you got the Warriors are now 10, and then you got the Kings at 8. So, but anyway, Correct. So you're saying the Lakers will come out as well as the Pelicans. And then from there, do you see anybody, the teams to beat from my perspective are the Celtics in the East and in the West, I think the Nuggets, because they're the defending champs, right? But you're saying the Minnesota Timberwolves. Yep. Are going to be the guys that you think could beat the Denver Nuggets, right?
I will tell you, they're my choice for the going to the finals. I think the Timberwolves are going to go to the finals. Yeah.
Wow.
That's how strongly I feel about them.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think they are. Woo! Yeah, we'll see. Bro, I mean, you know, obviously we'll be meeting every week. So if I've got mud on my face here in a couple of weeks, we'll know it. But I think the Timberwolves are a solid, solid squad. I think Anthony Edwards he's built with the right stuff. I think I think that they're going to represent the West.
All right. Yeah. All right. So,
and I think, right, unfortunately, well, I think my Warriors aren't going to make the playoffs. They'll make the play-ins.
I think the Warriors are going to, let's put it this way. I know that nobody wants to play the Warriors. I agree for a fact, right? They're a smaller team, but believe it or not, they're the best rebounding team in the NBA right now. So that's interesting, counterintuitive, because they're not that big, right? But they just have a lot of gritty guys on that team. And a lot of these young guys, I think, have picked them all up, you know? So, you know, unfortunately, Steve Kerr realized that too late. I think he should have played them a long time ago at this level that they're doing right now. But, you know, it's better late than never. And they're at this point right now. They're fighting, you know, they're in the play-in, but they're trying to get higher than that. And they could. I think that's their motivation. So I think that they're going to make some noise, in my opinion. Okay. I don't know if they'll go to the finals, but I think they're going to be a challenge for some players,
right, especially if they come out of the first. You know me; I hope you're right. You're always the optimist. I tend to be the pessimist.
The only thing
that would have changed my mind, and obviously we won't see it today. I'd really like to see Trayce Jackson-Davis take a nice solid run at Anthony Davis and see how he plays. Can he? Yeah. Obviously, he's not going to stop Anthony Davis, but can he put him in some foul trouble?
Contain him.
Contain him. Can he? You know? Can he? You know, take some rebounds away from him or things of that nature. If I were to see that tonight, but obviously we're not, then I think that might put a little more hope with me. But right now, the Lakers are just, they're big. They're a big squad, and it's just hard for the Warriors to deal with big squads. The Warriors have had
issues with
long, tall squads all season long.
Yep, I agree. Yep. So, all right, so we cover the playoff and play-in outlook. I think we put enough time to that thing. So now we're going to go on to your topic, Sam, the final two segments. So go ahead and take it away, man.
All right. So the first one I want to talk about is it's an article from a website called Fadeaway World. The article is the most skilled NBA players of all time. So I wanted to go through with this a little bit because you and I have had a lot of conversations. One of the conversations that I remember, and I don't think we were necessarily on opposite ends, but was discussing Shaquille O'Neal's greatness. And my thing is, like, it's like me going into a room playing with a bunch of kindergartners. Like, who's going to stop me? I mean, you couldn't stop that dude. And so, you know, the fact that he didn't shoot free throws that well, the fact that he really couldn't shoot from outside of 10, 12 feet very well. I mean, to me, I, you know, he's dominant. I will never dispute that with anyone. But how much skill did he really have? He was just big, and he was blessed to be big and very, very athletic. Now, athletic, we can argue that's a skill, but he could just move like he was 6'2", except he was, you know, 7 foot plus and 340 pounds, 50 pounds. No one was going to stop him. So anyway, that's why this article intrigued me, because of conversations that we had like that in the past. So I'm going to kind of, I'm going to go over all the names here, and then we'll kind of, we'll kind of break it down a little bit. So at the top of the pyramid is Jordan and Kobe, right? They're the top. Right. They're considered the most skilled players. Then the layer below that is going to be Allen Iverson, Kyrie, Steph, and Durant, right? That's the layer below them, right? Yeah. So, and then at the third level, so there's five levels total. At the third level, we got Akeem, we got Larry Bird, we got Isaiah Thomas, we got Jerry West, James Harden, and Chris Paul. That's at the third tier. At the fourth tier, which I think is fascinating, because I can just see all of the LeBron lovers just having this, like, freaking out at this thing, is LeBron. Crazy. At the fourth, yep, is LeBron, Nash, Luka, which might be a little early in his career to start having, putting him in these type of things, but Luka, Magic, Oscar Robertson, Tracy McGrady, and Pete Maravich, right? That's the fourth level. And then the final level here, we've got Kawhi, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, Kevin Garnett, Jokic, Nowitzki, Stockton. Is that Iceman?
That's Iceman, baby.
That is, yep, Iceman, right? That's Gervin. We got Tim Duncan, we got Paul George, and we got Damian Lillard, right? So that's the way the pyramid is built. So a couple things, you know, obviously being a Warrior fan, I'm like, crap, how is Steph in the second tier? Like, Steph's right, the most dominant shooter. But I kind of digested this. I looked at it. And so let me pause there.
Let me ask you a question to kind of help frame this a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let me ask you this. What do you think are the skills that basketball players should have to be on that top layer? Let me ask you that. What are the skills that you think that they should have?
So I think that the most skilled players should be able to reflect to some degree equally, both on offense and defense. I think that that is the most critical part, which is why I don't have a problem with Jordan and Kobe being at the top of this pyramid, because they were both outstanding offensive and defensive players. Jordan is probably the ideal in that sense, right? He was, you know, one top, and this has always been my argument when you get into the LeBron Jordan discussions, is, you know, Jordan won Defensive Player of the Year. Like, I don't even know if LeBron's ever made an all-defensive team. You know,
I think early in his career he did. I don't know. I don't have the information in front of me, but I know early in his career he was definitely more defensive minded.
Correct. So to me, you look at that, and Jordan's, I mean, that's huge to win Defensive Player of the Year, to win MVP of the Year, to win MVP of the Finals. I mean, the guy had very few flaws, and even early in his career, I'd be like, he can't shoot. Well, that was settled by, you know, year five or six. He had a very decent jumper, was very good. And Kobe, you know, obviously mimicked a lot of his game, a Absolutely. Lot of his style, a lot of his things, yep, off of Jordan. And he was very, very talented player. So I don't have any issues with that. So that's, to me, when I look at the skills, I got to look at both offense and defense. That's how you calculate it. And that's where you get to the next layer. But let me stop there and see your thoughts.
Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and agree with you. I don't have no problem with Jordan and Kobe being at the very top because of how good they were on both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively. But if we want to break down like the skills, okay, to me, shooting is definitely a skill, right? You have, yep, to have it in basketball to, okay, be, you know, relevant, in my opinion. Yep. Second one, I think, is passing ability, I think, yep, is a skill for sure, right? And then rebounding is also a skill. And then another one, I would say, of course, playing defense is a skill, but it's a mindset that you have to have in order to play defense. And I think that's hard work, you know, and I would argue that hard work is a skill because not everybody can do it, right? They don't have the desire to do it. The desire to be good is a skill, in my opinion. So I would say those four in particular stand out to me. Athleticism, you know, I don't know if it's a skill, it's a gift. Is it a skill? I don't know. Can you get, if you, to me, something is a skill is if you can build to be good at that, right? To me, correct, right? So you can do shooting. You can learn to be a good shooter. You can learn to be a good passer. You can learn to be a good rebounder, right? You know, but the intangibles, like the basketball IQ, is that a skill? You know, can you teach that? I think you can to a certain point, but you have it or you don't, man, right? So yeah. That's kind of the gray area for me, right? The basketball IQ, the desire to want to win, right? I mean, that is a skill, because you know that both Kobe and Jordan, they were that way, man. They did not want to lose. They would carry their teams and put their teams on their back no matter what. And I respect that they have those guys at the very top because they deserve to be at the top, right?
I agree. Yep. Well, one thing I wanted to add to that is there's two statistics on the defensive side that would define your defensive ability. If you're a guard or what we would call a smaller player, your ability to steal the ball or tip aways or things of that nature.
Deflections, yep. Right?
And if you're a big man, your ability to block shots.
Anticipation, right? Yeah.
Correct. And then if you're a big man, your ability to block shots. You know, how many blocks do you get, right? Those type of things. So I would say that those two – now, if you're a guy that can do both, then amen. Not too many of those guys have been around that can steal the ball and block the shots. But yeah, so then we get to the next tier, which is Allen Iverson, you know, all offense, no defense. Kyrie, all offense, no defense. Steph, all offense, no defense. Durant is
– he can play
defense. He's all offense, and he can play defense.
But he learned that when he was a Warrior. He learned that when he was a Warrior, man. Honestly, correct. He wasn't that good of a defender when he was at Oklahoma City.
Correct. Yeah. And so, but if you look at them, right, you look at Allen Iverson changed the game as a small man, right? I mean, for those older heads, you know, probably think back to Tiny Nate Archibald, who was kind of in a similar vein in terms of his style that he played like Iverson. But Iverson changed the game in terms of his ability to get to the hoop, his toughness as a little guy, right? You look at Kyrie, like, that guy's got handles that are unbelievable. Like,
absolutely. You will never see that again, man. I mean, he's incredible.
Correct. He's incredible. And then incredible. And then you go to Steph, like best shooter in the history of the game. And that was the one thing that Steph, I guess, makes me most proudest as a Warrior fan is like, you can argue who the best dunker was and you can argue who the best rebounder was. It's very few arguments about who the best shooter is. The best shooter is Steph. Like, no one's going to really argue with you, whether you're a Warriors fan or not. No one's really going to argue with you that there's – I mean, you got Reggie Miller. You got Klay Thompson. You got, you know
– Ray Allen.
Ray Allen, but Steph's better. And then you got Durant, absolutely, who is the original unicorn, right? The guy who seven-footer, could play outside, could drive. So each of those guys bring a unique offensive skill set to the second level. So I think that's why they're in that second level, because – They're the leaders at their offensive skill, but collectively they're very poor defense. Your thoughts on that second level?
You know, I know why that those guys are in the second level is because they're predominantly known for one side of the ball, predominantly. Although you can make an argument that Kevin Durant, you know, is more defensive minded than the other three, which I agree that he is. But they all are highly skilled offensive players in the second tier. And that's pretty much why I think they're there. But they're all elite, right? They're all elite at what they do. So that's my thought. I think the writer had this, what we were talking about, the ability to be very skilled on both sides of the ball, and that's why Kobe and Jordan at the top. But the other ones, they're flawed in other areas.
Correct. Right. So then we get to the third tier, which this breaks my heart because Olajuwon I think should be higher.
He should be at least in the second tier.
I agree. But, you know, obviously maybe they did it this way so the pyramid would fit and it would work as a pyramid, right? But I agree. Olajuwon was a very, very, very good defender.
Skilled. He had very feet, skilled.
Could block shots. And steals. Offensively, he was very good. I wouldn't say he was elite offensively, but he was every bit – the defensive guy that Allen Iverson was the offensive guy, right? Yeah. So clearly when I look at Olajuwon, I can tell that this pyramid favors offense over defense, right? Yep. So because they put the unique offensive guys higher. But to me, Olajuwon should be in that second tier at the lowest.
Well, you know, yeah, real quick. If we're talking about elite offensive players, real quick, before There's one guy that they omitted, that Kareem. Kareem should be on this list.
Oh, he no, I
be
that
on
was
on the second tier. He should be on the second tier because he had the most unstoppable shot in the NBA that we've ever seen. So anyway, go ahead.
I could argue he might be on the first tier. I mean, he could block shots. He won defensive. I mean, he's solid defensive player. And
yes.
I could make arguments for him to be on that first tier, but absolutely not having Kareem here is a crime.
I agree.
Yep. So then we work our way through. We got Larry Bird and Isaiah Thomas and Jerry West. To me, I don't know if Harden belongs in this third tier.
He probably I understand why he's there, but he should be lower, honestly. I agree with you. He shouldn't be in that tier. Although he's a really, really an offensively gifted athlete. I mean, he's the one who created the step back 3-point shot. We've never seen it before until he created it. He's the one who did
Correct.
It. And, you know, he's a bigger, stronger guard. He can break people down with his dribbling. He's a really good dribbler. But, you know, offensive, that's all he is. He's a good passer, too. We learned that when he became a point guard at Houston, you know, because before that, he wasn't really that. He was kind of more of a sixth man guy coming off for OKC. Yeah. But, you know, I can see why he's there because he is very elite from an offensive standpoint. But I don't have a problem with him being lower. So
yeah, I'd want him lower simply for the fact that he not only does he not play defense, he blatantly doesn't care about defense. And to me, like, that's got to count for something in terms of, like, negative skill points, right? Like for all the skill you have on the offensive side of the court, like, you got to at least want to play defense. Like, at least be there. Right. So to me, I'd have him lower. Chris Paul is fascinating to me because out of everyone there, I think he is the most truest third-level talent because he is very good offensive. He is good defensively, but just not as good as the players above. So to me, I look at that list and I look at Chris Paul and I'm going, yeah, that's perfect. Like Bird and Isaiah. Isaiah probably belongs there too. Bird, I'm a little conflicted with on Bird.
Yeah, I hear you, but, you know, he's when we look back at his career, he's way better than we thought when he was playing, honestly.
No, I agree.
You know, the commentary about, you know, and I forgot who said it. One of the guys said, oh, you know, if he was black, he'd be average, right? You know, and we're making all this noise because he's white, you know, and you know, there was a little bit of, you know, me believing that at that time. But as I look back and see this guy play, crap, he was hella good, man. He was really freaking good. Way, but I mean, if you put him in today's NBA, he would flourish because he could shoot, right?
Yep.
And he's gritty. He could rebound. He could pass. You know, defensive, he was smart. He was kind of like Mullen, right? He knew how to use his hands to, you know, create steals, right? That wasn't really what he was known for, but he could do it. So I agree with you. I understand why he's there is because I think a lot of people like me probably underestimated him when we were watching him.
I almost would want to put him like at a 2.5, not quite at 3, not quite at 2, kind of right
in between.
In between those two. All right, now we're moving to level 4. Now comes the topic at hand. The first guy there, LeBron. What are your thoughts on LeBron?
He should be higher, without a doubt. He should be way higher than that. I have a problem with that. And I think the reason why he put him there is because of his sheer size. It's the same argument you have with Shaq, right? But Shaq, he was just a big guy who could just use his size to score. This guy can do the same thing, but he's skilled as hell, man. He could shoot. He could pass. He can rebound. You know, he can play D when he wants to.
Let me ask you this. Is he as good or a better shooter than Larry Bird?
No, Larry Bird's a better shooter.
Okay. Is he as good or better of a low post threat than Hakeem Olajuwon?
No. Hakeem Olajuwon, that was his whole game, man.
All right. Is he as good or better of a passer than Magic?
Probably very similar, but Magic is better than him. But very similar. To me, I think he's the closest comparison to Magic that we've ever seen. Is LeBron James.
So
and I said that a long time ago, man. I called that one.
I agree with you. And so the interesting part of this pyramid is you can tell how much they put weight on assists. Because look at Stockton. He's the all-time assist leader. He's on the 5th level. Magic, who many would argue is a fantastic player, he's on the 4th level. And I would argue that LeBron's greatest strength is his ability to pass, his assist.
Yeah, I agree. And to me, that's a harder skill than rebounding. That's a harder skill, in my opinion, to do it really well than just pure scoring. Because, you know, you have to be able to have vision and be able to anticipate things. I mean, some of the passes that, you know, Magic did were unbelievable. Yep. LeBron can do it too. And to me, that's an underrated skill. So that's a great observation that you made, is that this guy who did this article didn't really value assists as much as scoring, as much as maybe the defensive side of things, you know?
Correct.
Yeah. Right. So,
yeah. But assists, so if you look at assists as the third leg of offensive skill, right?
Yeah.
Beyond, right, you know, scoring and rebounding. Well, rebound's not really an offensive
skill. Rebound's more of a defensive.
Yeah, more of a defense. But if you count it, you know, below offense, below scoring, then I can see why LeBron is there, because LeBron is hardly the scorer that anybody is above him in terms of just a raw score. LeBron's not a raw scorer. He's a passer. Yeah. He's a creator.
Which makes his accomplishment even more incredible, because he wasn't ever known that in his whole career was never known as a scorer. And yet he's the all time leading scorer now, man. Correct. So that just goes to show you how good this freaking guy is. As much as I agree, I don't hate the guy personally. I just don't like him as a player. He just annoys me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's a great fucking player.
Yep. So, because then you have Nash, who was a fantastic passer and was probably a better three pointer than LeBron, but just didn't shoot him in quantity. Then you got Luka, who's really interesting to me that he's in here, right? If I'm not mistaken, he's probably the youngest player in this list.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, so yes. by a long shot.
And Jokic is probably the next one after that. Jokic is after that, because he's below that. They're similar.
When we get to our next topic, which will be the triple doubles, you know, Luka has a shot at owning that historically, yes, right? He's a younger guy. So then we got Magic, we got the Big O, we got Tracy McGrady, and Pete Maravich. Anybody there that you think should be higher or lower?
I think Magic should be higher. I think LeBron should be higher.
Where would you put him?
Yeah, I would put him in the third tier. I would put Akeem in the second tier. I would put Bird in the second tier. I'm okay with everybody else. I put Harden below the third tier. He shouldn't be in the third tier. And Chris Paul, I don't know, man. You believe that he should be in third? I didn't see it, but I understand your point.
Anyway, yeah, I think he's a solid player, both offensively and defensively. I just don't think he is – like, his skill, right, isn't really passing. His skill is controlling the flow of the game.
Yeah, he's a
good player. He can do that better probably than anyone on this list.
Yeah, he's probably the truest point guard that we have on this list, although John Stockton fans would have something to say about that, but –
Stockton, well, it depends on how you define point guard, right? If point guard's pure job is to pass, then Stockton and Magic are the most purest point guards on this list. But if you but if you want some offense from your point guard, then Stockton would fall short, because Stockton
was a sneaky scorer, man.
Well, he just didn't do it enough. He wasn't a threat.
He didn't need to, because he had freaking Karl Malone.
Correct.
You know, he's feeding Karl Malone. That's why Karl Malone's like number four on the list, I think, all time. Wherever he is now, he's four or five. It's because of him. You know, this guy was an incredible freaking passer. Well, so
he was. And I believe he's still the assist leader, if I'm not mistaken, in the NBA.
He is the assist leader and the steals leader.
Yeah.
And I don't think his assist, it'll never be caught. Nor will his steals record ever be caught. So anyway, he's underrated. He should be higher. But anyway, by the way, we should probably get through this list, because we're running out of time, man. So get through it. Get through the other stuff.
All right. All right. So really quick, going through the fifth tier here. Just a reminder: Kawhi, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade, Garnett, Jokic, Stockton. Why do I keep forgetting Kirk Nowitzki?
Nowitzki.
I keep forgetting Nowitzki's name. And then you got Iceman, George Gervin. You got Tim Duncan. You got Paul George and Damon Lillard. I look at this, and to me, I don't think Melo belongs in that list.
You think he should be not even on that list at all? Right? Is that what you're saying?
In terms of the other, I think. Well, I'll put it this way: I think he's a level below the guys on that list.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah. But he, you know, so a lot of people forget how good of a scorer that guy was. He was a really damn good scorer because he could do it from every level, right? And he was hard to deal with because of his size. So
the one guy I'm having heartburn with is Tim Duncan. I feel like he should be higher.
He should be higher. But the thing is, we talked about this in the previous our previous episodes, is that Duncan is underrated, and he's underrated because of he's just an unassuming guy, and he played for a small market, right? And he had David Robinson kind of overshadowing him a little bit. He had not that Tony Parker was a bigger player than him, but he had good talent around him, right? But he's just a very low profile guy. And I think because of that, it hurts him. I think that's part of the reason why
I think he's admired. Well, I think Duncan suffers from the same disease that Jabbar suffers from. And that is, they don't play with joy on their face. They play like it's a lame, right?
Yeah, that's a good call.
Because here's the thing. I mean, people are going to argue, but in a lot of ways, I felt the Warriors were a small market team back in the day, because no one,
sure.
you'd have people asking you, where the hell is Golden State? Like, where do these guys even
play? Where's Golden State? Yeah.
Where is Golden State? Like, they wouldn't even know that. And Steph brought them up, but Steph is every bit as, I think Duncan and Steph are every bit talented, but Steph is more joyous. He does his little dance. He does his little things. Yeah. He's got his, so he wins people over. That's why he has so many fans.
He's got personality. Like, he's got a lot of personality. Means something.
Correct. Yeah. You look at Duncan, you look at Jabbar, and you're like, these guys look like they're miserable out there. Like, they don't even want to play. And I think that's what hurt Duncan. But I think Duncan, from a skill perspective, man, I'd put him at least at the third tier. At the very lowest, I'd put him at the third tier. I think he should be two tiers higher. I think he's one of the biggest offenses on this list. I watched the Iceman play. Agree. The Iceman was a good scorer, but I don't know if he belongs here.
I hear you. Yep.
Well, like if you're gonna put Gervin here, if you put Gervin here, I'm like, where's Alex English? There's a couple of players. Where's Rick Barry? You get into that realm. Wilt clearly isn't on here. Wilt was.
Where's Wilt and. Where's Bill Russell? Right.
Correct. So
yeah, Kareem, I like this. Bill Russell, Will, like what?
That bottom tier clearly has today biased, right? It's the newer players. Let's stick them in there, and then like the Iceman, it feels like you can read through this article, and they talk about why he picked each player. I think Nowitzki is good there. I think Jokic is good there with the potential. Actually, I don't know if Jokic could even move up. Do you think Jokic can move up on this list?
Absolutely. But when it's all said and done, he's going to have the triple-doubles record. He's probably going to have a few more championships under his ring. He's going to have a few more championships on his hand. He's going to be I see him climbing up to where Olajuwon is, honestly.
Really? To the third tier, huh?
If he stays healthy, absolutely. As much of a detriment he is on the defensive side, his offensive side is unparalleled. We haven't seen anything like this in history, especially from that center position. We've never seen it.
Correct. So speaking of triple doubles, we're going to kind of segue into my next topic.
Last topic,
which was the triple double. And the reason I brought this up is because of Jokic. But what's interesting is, you're like, he's going to be the triple doubles leader, but Russell Westbrook is currently the triples double leader, and he's nowhere on this list. He's nowhere on anyone's list.
Oh yeah. You're talking about on the pyramid list.
On the pyramid. Yes. Yeah. He's not on the pyramid list. He's not, I'm really, Russell Westbrook is interesting because I don't know how well he's thought of in terms of like the historical sense of the league, as a historical player. But, Russell Westbrook sits at the top with 198 triple-doubles, right? Below him is Oscar Robertson with 181, right? So the big O, everyone knows, even if you didn't, if you're a basketball fan, you know who Oscar Robertson is. You may not have watched him play, but you know who he is. Below that, you got Magic, and then you got Jokic. So Jokic is at 130, right? So Westbrook's at 198. Jokic is at 130. Jokic is 29 years old, give or take. I think he'll soon be 30. I think he will pass Russell Westbrook.
What I wanted to talk about
part of this is I wanted to get your thoughts on, is the triple-double the same today as it was before? Does it mean more? Does it mean less? Now that the game has less physical contact, now that the game has been, you know, promoted more towards passing, promoted more towards shooting, like, is the triple-double more of an accomplishment or less of an accomplishment in your opinion?
Okay, let me put it this way. I think that the triple-double back in the 70s, 80s, 90s was highly regarded because it was so rare, because not many people did it. Oscar Robertson was one of the main guys doing it for the most part. That's, you know, what he was known for until, you know, Russell Westbrook broke his record. You know, Magic Johnson was a guy who also kind of started, I would say that the emergence of Magic Johnson, I think, kind of started putting triple doubles on the map a little bit more.
I agree.
Because prior to that, you know, it's just been Oscar Robertson. He's a player from the 50s and 60s, really, right? And a little bit in at the 70s at the very end. But Magic Johnson, I think, is the one who brought more of the awareness of the triple double and his flashiness and his passing, you know, and because he was a big guard, he could do everything well, right? Yeah. So from him, you know, he's the one who I think kind of, you know, put the triple double on the stage. And then, you know, you started seeing other guys started doing it, you know, Larry Bird doing it, you know, as well. You know, and then from there, you got, you know, the new kids on the block, you know, that we have today. You know, Jason Kidd was another guy. We even talked about him. He should have been on that pyramid, in my opinion, right?
You're right.
Yeah, should have been a guy that he should have been on that pyramid. You know, again, I think you're right that the author of that article probably just didn't really value passing as much. And that's a great observation that you made on that. So, and I argue that passing is a huge skill, as big of a skill to me as shooting, to me. Because, you know, you have to be able to see the floor and anticipate things and be able to get the ball in a variety of ways to the guy.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate with you for a minute here, Eddie. So when Magic Johnson was passing, I agree, it was a skill. Because Magic Johnson had to run the fast break, draw the defense away from himself, find the open player, put the ball in a position to go. I would argue that the assist has lost some value in today's game because in reality, a large portion of what these guys do is attack the hoop and then throw it to the three-point line for a three-point shot. And I think that that is not a high skill. You know, White Chocolate, the old Jason Williams would run the fast break and he would be, you know, Pete Maravich, those kind of guys. I would agree that John Stockton, that was a skill because everybody's running down the ball and you have to find the offensive player slashing to the hoop. You've got to pinpoint a pass. But now in today's game, they attack the hoop and then throw it back out.
Yeah, they throw it out. Right. It's different. It's different. I know what you're saying.
80% of the assists are made.
I hear you. Yeah. The driving kick assist is what you're seeing more and more of.
Yeah. You never saw that back in the day. If you threw it out, they were going to reset the offense and they were going to try to attack the hoop again.
Right, you know? Because they didn't have as many shooters as you have today, and we all have Steph Curry to thank for today's NBA because he's the one.
Correct. But not only did we have enough shooters, like back. I mean, obviously the 3-point line plays a role here, but they were just like, that's not a good shot. You know, if you're shooting a 20 foot jumper, why would you do that when you can get in the paint? Like that was the whole objective, was to get as close to the hoop as possible. And so, to me, I would argue that the assist has lost some of its luster. You know,
yeah, but I think probably more. I understand why, maybe because of the way the game is played, and maybe, you know, the rules kind of play into it a little bit, where it's a little easier to be able to, you know, do more offensive minded things now than back in the 80s and 90s, because you know the teams were a little rougher on each other and they played harder, and you know they had to change some of the rules because people were getting hurt, right? But I think, you know, I think the way the NBA is played today, you see it's not as a rarity anymore. The triple double isn't as rare as it was before. And I think because of that, I think it's not as valued as high as it was back when Oscar Robertson and Magic Johnson and Larry Bird were doing it, because there were only three that were doing it. Now you have a plethora of guys doing it, right? I mean, look at the list right now. If you look at the top 10, you have one, two, three, five of those in the top 10 are current players today. Five out of the top 10.
I agree.
Five of them. That's half. That's right there. So that tells you that proves that essentially supports my point, is that it's become way more common. And I think because of that, it's not as valued as high anymore. But does it affect a player's legacy? I mean, maybe. The proof in the pudding right now is Russell Westbrook. He's kind of the poster boy for that argument. He's a triple double king right now, and he was not even be seen on any of that pyramid. You know, again, this is the author's opinion, right?
But in fairness to the author of this article, I wouldn't have put Russell Westbrook in there either.
Yeah, but that's interesting, because you know that tells us that triple doubles don't really matter that much. That's what it says. I mean, but triple doubles before, you know, the 80s was very rare. It didn't happen that much, man.
Correct. You know? But you take two through five. They're all on the pyramid.
Yeah, you're
Oscar
right.
Robinson, Oscar, Magic Johnson, Nikola, Jokic, and LeBron James.
Harden and Luka, 8 and 9. Yep. They're on the list.
8 and 9.
Larry Bird at 10.
Yep.
So yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a perception thing. I mean, Russell Westbrook, you were talking about joy. You know, he doesn't play with joy. I mean, that guy's playing angry all the freaking time, man.
Yeah.
But he's an ultra competitive guy. He's an ultra competitive guy. Jordan was the exact same way. Jordan played. He was ultra competitive, man. What made him appealing or endearing is that freaking tongue coming out. You know, he's doing like freaking, you know, the dunks or the pass. You do something nasty, you have that tongue out, right? And they had a bunch of commercials with him, and he's a good looking guy too. So, you know, he's appealing. No, he's a marketable guy.
That all helped him.
Yeah, it all helped. And then, you know, and then Russell Westbrook, he has a scowl on his face all the time. He's just pissed all the time, you know, and that says something. People can't really gravitate to that.
But, you know, unless
you're a hoops fan who appreciates ultra competitive guys, you're not really going to like Russell Westbrook unless you're one of those guys that you really appreciate that fire.
And I'll be honest with you. And I think one of the things that watered down his in particular was I remember several games where people are allowing him to get the rebound. People are, you know, they're fudging the numbers for him to get his triple double. And I think that. If you're a real basketball fan, you remember things like that. Like, that's cheap. Absolutely. Don't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I remember Strahan when he was going for a sack record, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, come on, man.
He just fell.
You got to earn it, man. Like, don't do that, you know? I'd rather you not have it than to get it that way, you know? But but so that's where I have Russell Westbrook. And just quickly, because I know we're way over here, you know, Luka Doncic, you know, what is he, 25 years old, 26 years old? He's got 76 triple-doubles. 70. I think he's going to be the one that passes both Jokic and Westbrook.
Yeah, assuming that everybody stays healthy, his trajectory is there for sure. Jokic is, I mean, for the position that he plays, it's incredible because he doesn't have the ball. You know, he does have the ball in his hand a lot. I mean, the offense runs through the guy, but he's not a point guard. He's a center. You know, he has to get the ball from somebody. So the fact that he's able to do what he's doing at the position he plays makes it incredible. To me,
I agree. Anyway. Really quick before we end it on the triple double, I have some thoughts here, but I just wanted to ask you, what are the easiest stats to get in a triple double?
The easiest stats I would say is probably rebounding. I think rebounding is the easiest. I think so. Yeah.
So how would you, let's go rebounds, points, assists, and blocks. How would you rank them?
As far as easiest?
Yeah, easiest to hardest.
The easiest would be rebounding. Okay, now we're assuming that a guy that we're talking about has the skill set to shoot. Are we talking about that? Because we know Draymond Green can't shoot that well. He's not the greatest offensive guy, but he does have triple doubles, right?
Well, so we're assuming that he has some offense. He doesn't necessarily have
some offense.
He could be a dunker. He could be a low post guy. He can score, right?
I would say rebounding is first as the easiest. Second easiest is probably scoring. And then third, I would say the assists. And then fourth would be a steal. I would say steal and then a block.
Yeah. Okay. That would be your – okay. And the reason I ask is because I brought up a little bit of an article. You know, there's been four quadruple doubles in the history of the NBA, right? One by Nate Thurman.
Yeah, Akeem.
David Robertson, and the only guard on here is a guy named Alvin Robertson who played for the Spurs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he had 20 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists, and 10 steals. And to me, that's an impressive number because, you know, the 10 steals is a hard thing to do.
Right? Absolutely.
He's the only guard on there. That's like, that's really, really hard. When you have steals, and even in a triple-double, is like really, really hard. So I just wanted to throw that out for the audience, just bring that up. I thought that was fascinating, you know.
Well, so I don't know if you remember this game that Draymond Green played about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. He had a triple-double without points being one of the doubles.
That was incredible.
That's impressive, man.
That's incredible.
That's freaking impressive.
I agree.
I think it was blocks. I don't know if it was assists. Blocks, steals, and rebounds and assists. I forgot which one it was, the blocks or the steal, but he had one of those being the double-digit one and then the assists and rebounds. That's what I'm saying.
I believe it was block, assists, and rebounds. That's what they were. I think that's fascinating. You know, if you could just make five baskets, bro, you'd have a quadruple-double.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I brought up the argument. Like, are we talking about somebody who can shoot, right? Because
that was the poster boy
for that argument, so... But hey, Twan, man, good topics, man. I thought this was a good fun show that we did. We talked about the NCAA finals. We talked about the playoff picture, the upcoming playoff picture with the play-ins. All the teams have been already decided. And then we talked about this article that I think it definitely conjured up some good discussion and some, a good content for people to listen to. You know, I'm sure that you're going to have your opinions on who should be on that pyramid or not. And then the last thing about the triple-double. Yeah, absolutely. We'd love to hear your comments. And the last one was the triple-double, you know, whether it contributes to the player's greatness. So great show, man. Buzzer Beaters episode 2. Again, for those of you, you can find this sports-related podcast such as Buzzer Beaters, which is the name of our show, as well as Points on the Board that William Del Pilar runs. You can find it at grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find it at Rumble, YouTube, under the profile Grumblings Media, as well as your traditional podcast outlets such as Spotify, Google, and Apple. All right, brother. Hey, great show, man. And let's go cheer on the Doves. They're playing the Lakers right now. And hopefully next week when we reconvene, hopefully the Warriors will be better than 10. So
we'll see some of the predictions that we did today. See how that's looking.
Exactly. All right, brother. All right, man. Have a good week, man. Later, man.
All right, bye.
All right. See you.